I heard you blew up your barbecue.
Propane tank blew.
What?
I blew my propane tank.
How did you accomplish that?
Too much lighter fluid.
So was that like a devastating, like the insurance company has to come out type accident?
It just missed the dog. Poor Charlotte. So the upshot is there's going to be no barbecue for me at my house, and I'm looking for barbecue spots on July 4th.
The burning question of this is, what were you
attempting
to cook?
Why would you say burning question?
You got free agency stuff to deal with over July 4th anyway, so don't worry about it.
I was trying to grill. I was trying to grill some steaks last night.
We're off to a terrible start. Aaron Falk, Kyle Goon is choking on an open-faced sandwich. He wouldn't have that problem if they had another piece of bread on top of it. Tony Jones here. We're talking Utah Jazz basketball, free agency, the draft, all sorts of...
Draft, free agency, all sorts of goodness. Welcome to the Tribune Podcast. Myself, Tony Jones, Aaron Falk, and Kyle Goon. With his open-faced sandwich, and
that is not an open-faced sandwich. They got to try a little harder to earn my respect on that open-faced sandwich situation.
Can we do like Gordon Hayward? I mean, are we gonna say it was a sandwich from a place, or are we gonna name this place right now?
Yeah, let's say a sandwich from a place.
Until
they pay us off or we get sponsors, there's no more name brand dropping in this podcast. Obviously, the big Hayward news or speculation or whatever is the story du jour. It will be for another week. It won't ever stop until it stops. The story today, Adrian Wojnarowski from The Vertical, soon to apparently be ESPN, says that the Boston Celtics are planning to try to create some sort of package where they could get Hayward and Paul George this summer. What do you think when you see that, hear that? I mean, what are you hearing right now, Tony, from your side?
You know what I think? I just keep thinking that it just goes back to Gordon. Do you want to play in Utah or do you want to play somewhere else? And you know, at this point, you know, we can have all the speculation we want. We can have all of the grand plans, grandiose plans that we want. Boston is a good basketball situation for Gordon Hayward with a great coach and a great front office. The Utah Jazz are a great basketball situation for Gordon Hayward with a great coach and a great front office. So, I mean, it's, you know, I don't look at Woj's report, and obviously we know he's pretty much 100% accurate. But I don't look at Woj's report and say, oh, my God, this tilts the meter, because the Jazz are a 55-win team with Gordon Hayward next year. And Boston's a 55-win team with Gordon Hayward next year. It's just, where do you want to play, man? Do you want to play in Utah or do you want to play somewhere else? That's where it comes down to.
So let's do a quick pitch. What's your pitch? If you're the Miami Heat, what's your pitch to Gordon Hayward?
If you come to us, we pair you with Hassan Whiteside. We have cap space. I'm Pat Riley. I am a miracle worker. I am the author and the originator and the facilitator of the big three that won championships. And you don't have any state tax here. You live in the sunlight, and we're in Miami, and I will build you a contender within 2 years. That's the pitch.
Okay. And your pitch if you're Boston?
Come with me. Come with us. Come to the Boston Celtics. We have 17,000 first-round picks over the next 3 years to build around you with. We have Isaiah Thomas. We have Al Horford. We're going to have Paul George, even though if we have to have Paul George, we have to gut 60% of our roster to afford you, both of you guys. But if you do so, we still have a billion first-round picks to build around you guys, and you guys are the core that will eventually be known as the core that took down the Golden State Warriors.
So looking at some of this HeatHoops.com, really good analysis actually today on the money that it would take to bring Gordon Hayward to Boston and then get Paul George and extend Paul George. They would essentially, I mean, they can bring Hayward in, no problem. They would have to clear somewhere in the neighborhood of, depending on how they structure it, between $23 and $30 million in space after that to get Paul George, which...
That means no Avery Bradley. That means no Marcus Smart. That means no Jay Crowder. That means no Avery Bradley and no Jay Crowder at minimum.
Or they dump Horford or they and dump someone Horford. Else and bring in a lesser center.
Right.
Which is... It
defeats the purpose.
Yeah. Bobby Marks, the Vertical, has them with 6 minimum or second round picks on their roster.
That's a lot.
To make that work.
That's a lot.
A third of more than a third of your roster is minimum contracts.
That's a lot.
Okay, so you're the last one. You're the Utah Jazz. What's your pitch to Gordon Hayward?
Pitch to Gordon Hayward is we have the best center in basketball. We have one of the best defenses in basketball. We have a young core who's still short of their prime. We have assets going forward in the way of first round picks. We have multiple first round picks next year, and we've built around you. And this is a team that we feel that can contend for a championship.
What do you expect to have happening? You know, midnight July 1, and you know, if you have any thoughts on when or where Gordon's taking these meetings at this point?
No thoughts on that, but the one thing is, obviously, you know, the three teams that Gordon's considering, which Utah, Miami, and Boston, there's not going to be a surprise fourth team. These are the three teams that Gordon is considering. You know, that's the one thing. Second thing, you know, you hear – I've heard that Gordon is absolutely still open to returning. He just wants to win. So I think it's going to come down to, you know, who can sell Gordon on the vision of winning over the next 2 to 3 years, and that's the team that's going to be the victor.
Don't let him go to the Hamptons, huh? let me ask you this, Tony. You know, the way this process has kind of evolved of teams pitching free agents like they are now. I mean, What do you kind of see as important for the Jazz or anyone else who's suiting for Gordon to do in terms of how they present and the professionalism they kind of show in those presentations?
Well, I think it's close enough that it's going to mean a lot, and I think all three teams are going to get meetings. I would characterize the Miami Heat as a team that's in third place right now. I mean, I think it's a two-team race with the Heat being a team that has some distance to make up. So, you know, I think when you look at the Jazz, I think they've done everything right by Gordon over the life of this contract that he's going to complete on Friday. And I think that they've done everything that they can to make a compelling basketball case and to put a competitive roster around him. The question is it going to be enough for Gordon? Can he see the Jazz making a leap next year, making a leap the year after, possibly contending 2 or 3 years from now? Or can he see, you know, greener pastures, no pun intended, in Boston?
I still remember there's a USA Today story right after or shortly after the summer when he was a restricted free agent. They asked him basically, like, what did Michael Jordan do to woo you? Like, and obviously there was more to this, but the one quote from the story was Gordon Hayward saying, "It was really great. They brought out a bunch of like Sour Patch watermelons." like this is the one quote that he gave them. So Dennis Lindsay apparently hit the sour candies hard.
Hit the Sour Patch kids. So
what? The draft happened. We survived that. Were you surprised to see them? I mean, we talked last week about the possibility of them moving up. I don't think that's necessarily a surprise that they were working on that or maybe even who they were targeting.
I was surprised at how much it cost them. That's how
little it cost them.
Right, exactly.
We talked last week, Derek Favors might get you 10 spaces. How did Trey Lyles get the Jazz 11 slots better in a good draft to get the guy that they wanted?
I can just imagine right now. I mean, Dennis Lindsay on the phone with the Denver Nuggets. Look, man, we have a great 21-year-old for you, and you know he's exceptionally skilled. He can get the rebound, and he can dribble it the length of the floor. He can shoot the three-pointer. He can pass. He's a playmaking four. That's exactly what you need. Give me your lottery pick.
Yeah, and the one thing Dennis said was Utah had seen interest in Trey from Denver over the years, and apparently they had made multiple inquiries into Trey and how to get him. I think on one hand, if you're the Jazz, I mean, it is a little bit of a representation of a failure of, like, well, this lottery pick just didn't work out for us or our vision, long-term vision of what we wanted to be. And he obviously Trey was not didn't really take that step forward that I think was anticipated after how good he was over the summer. But it's on the other hand, I mean, you give away a guy who was basically a non-factor on a playoff team, was barely playing any minutes at all come the playoff series, and you get a guy who you think does fit into your long-term vision. And you get to kind of move up the draft a little bit. And again, given what we were saying about the depth of this draft, how much talent was in it, how hard it would be to move up 10 spaces or more, I'm impressed by that asset flip by the Jazz.
Let me ask a question. Is it a representation of failure if you surrender your 15th man who could not get off the bench in even the most dire circumstances down the stretch, and he moves you up 11 spots in the draft? Is that a representation?
Trey Lyles is the guy sandwiched between Miles Turner and Devin Booker in a draft 2 years ago.
Okay, that's fair. That is absolutely fair. He had positive value for you.
And he had positive value for you at the end. But, I mean, that would always hang over Trey Lyles here, even if he developed into – a bit of a role, like a nice role player for them or something like that. I think that's what Kyle's talking about, and that makes sense to me, and I think that you have to be honest about that.
Devin Booker would not be Devin Booker in Utah.
Yes and no. I mean,
I am not.
Trey Lyles wouldn't be Devin Booker in Phoenix probably, though.
That is very, very, very true. You know what? You win. You win.
This has been First Take.
Yeah, most convincing argument of all time. Just one sentence. Very, very well done, Aaron.
What if
you're supposed to be on my side?
What did you see from in watching, you know, highlights, film, whatever, of Donovan Mitchell? What do you like about his game? What do you think he can do next year? I mean, is it reasonable to expect him to be a regular contributor?
I'm not sure if it's reasonable to expect him to be a regular contributor because, I mean, he's stepping into a really crowded backcourt with a lot of people who, you know, I mean, right now, let's just take George Hill out of the equation. I mean, you have Dante Exum, you have Rodney Hood, you have Joe Ingles, you have Alec Burks, you know, before you get to Donovan Mitchell. And, you know, the Jazz are most likely going to add a point guard. So he's going to have to beat some people out. If he's playing 20 minutes a game next year, that means he's beating some people out. What I like about him is we talked about him last podcast. I mean, I like the way he competes. He competes defensively. He's really, really, really – he's a real bulldog defensively. Love his athleticism. You know, he has an ability to score. He has an ability to be a two-way prospect. You know, you're concerned about him with is even though he has a 6'10" wingspan, you know, he's still 6'3" and he's mostly a shooting guard. So he's got to figure out how to be a combo guard a little bit more, even play some more point. But he's a guy who the Jazz were excited about from the day they bought him in for a workout. And they wanted to figure out a way to try to get him, and they did.
Yeah, going a little bit into his character is you look at his family. It's an athletic family. His dad played baseball. He played baseball. He won two national championships at Brewster. He obviously was at a highly competitive Louisville program And even though he was sort of a late bloomer to basketball and sort of a late riser as a high school senior, you know, it's interesting how he was able to kind of develop at Brewster, at Louisville, and at all levels you've seen development. I think that's a big part of why the Jazz feel like investing in Donovan Mitchell is going to pay off, that he has seen those jumps and he has some ability and some athleticism to maybe make another one.
Well, that's what excites the Jazz about Mitchell, is the fact that he was a late bloomer, because, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, you know, he's still got a lot of upside left. Like, there's a lot of room for improvement. And the Jazz are one of the best developmental franchises in the league. So I think that's another reason that the Jazz have kind of been really excited about him.
Does this do anything for or tell anything about Dante Exum in his year and his value?
I don't think so. I mean, you know, everybody always fawns over the next big thing, over the next big recruit or whatever, over the next big draft pick. But, you know, Dante Exum, when it comes to Donovan Mitchell, has an incumbent advantage. And, you know, Dennis Lindsay had glowing things to say about Dante Exum on draft night. Now the question is, you know, do you think, you know, was he really playing well? Has he really been playing well, or is this, you know, okay, you know, I'm going to speak good about my guy, you know, in public? But I think there was no reason for Lindsay to really single Exum out the way he did last Thursday night. So, you know, you got to be interested to see how he responds to summer league.
Yeah, it is interesting. I think, you know, I think Dennis did go out of his way to give a shout out to Dante and said, you know, our trainer said today that he's working so hard, blah blah blah. But at the same time, I mean, the facts is you have a combo guard with a long wingspan who's one of the fastest guys in the draft, who's a defensive specialist. Well, that starts to sound a little bit like Dante Exum profile. I mean, I think Gordon Monson, his column last week, saying it was a shot across Dante's bow. I mean, he's not that far off. I mean, because a lot of the skill sets and profile, obviously they are different dimensions of players, and they're probably going to play different positions. But I mean, you look at the skill set and the profile, and Donovan Mitchell has a lot of interesting similarities to Dante, and you sort of wonder and. You know, Dennis said in his exit meeting with Dante, he had to speak some truth to him and challenge him. And I think the Jazz are at a point where they want to see some payoff with that lottery pick from Dante.
Here's the thing with Dante. If you go up to Dante right now and you were in his face and you called him a combo guard, he'd walk away from you. Because he thinks of himself 100%, absolutely, first, last, third, and foremost as a point guard. And he always has, and he always will. He played shooting guard because he just simply wanted to get on the floor. And that was a way for him to get on the floor, you know, this year. But, you know, if you ask him, I mean, he's going to tell you every day and twice on Sunday that he's a point guard. And that's the big difference between him and Donovan Mitchell. Donovan Mitchell is a shooting guard by trade. If he's going to be at the point guard spot, he's going to be learning how to play point guard. Dante Exum sees himself as a natural point guard who just happens to be big enough and athletic enough to play at other positions and other spots on the floor. So I think that's the big difference between the two. And that's why I say I don't see it so much as a shot across Dante's bow. I think if – you know, the Jazz traded for Ricky Rubio, I think that's more of a shot on Dante. Or if they traded for Patrick Beverley, I think that's more of a shot on Dante. I kind of think that Dante and Donovan Mitchell can operate pretty much independent of each other.
Well, we're going to see Dante Exum in Salt Lake, apparently, which is a surprise. It's not what Dante said was going to happen when the season ended. He said he wasn't playing summer league. So you're going to get a chance to see those gains or whatever in the next week, basically. And like you mentioned, you know, we're talking about Ricky Rubio, Patrick Beverley. This might be moot in some ways. Dennis Lindsay admitted that he's looking for some veteran help, that they need a veteran point guard on the roster. I guess that could be George Hill, could be somebody else. I mean, where do you think they stand with that a week, you know, after those talks about with the Rockets and Patrick Beverly began and since the draft happened?
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I think if George Hill if he's in a Jazz uniform, I think it's because they really needed each other. You know what I mean? I think George Hill's market is tenuous.
How so?
Well, because I think, you know, George Hill had Philly. Philly went and drafted Markelle Fultz. George Hill had the Brooklyn Nets. They traded for D'Angelo Russell. Now, the big competitor to the Jazz right now for George Hill is San Antonio Spurs. My friend and colleague Jabari Young reported that last week. I almost called him Jabari Parker like three times. And then I almost called him Jabari Bird. But Jabari Young reported that last week, and that was also something that I had been hearing. You know, San Antonio has to do a few things for that to happen. They have to either trade Danny Green or they have to waive and stretch and use the stretch provision on Tony Parker. But if one of those two things happen and they can clear the cap space, they're going to go after George Hill pretty hard. But, you know, the other team to watch is Minnesota, if they can clear Rubio in a trade. So, ironically, you know, Rubio and George Hill, the potential was there that they could essentially be traded for each other. One coming to the Jazz, one going to Minnesota. But, you know, when it comes to Dante, I think those are the people who affect his playing time, you know, specifically. I don't think Donovan Mitchell specifically affects his playing time.
Any other, I guess, free agency needs or wants for the Jazz at this point, or is it just – you have to wait and see what happens with Gordon.
I think you have to wait and see what happens, but I think they're going to need to bring in another power forward, or another big. But you know, I think right now, I mean, I think just everything with the Jazz, you have to either bring Gordon back or hope Gordon, you know, decides in the first 48 hours, so the market isn't dry when Gordon does decide. And I think that's if you're the Jazz, that's where you're at right now. What do you think, Kyle?
My job is to agree with you.
Your job is not to agree with me. What are you talking about?
Well, that's how it always works. I always agree with you. No, I.
We need to talk offline about this. Do we need to go and have a Shirley Temple and talk about this?
Have a Shirley Temple? Okay.
You know me.
No, I think the whole thing, I mean, at least my second tier understanding of it to Tony's understanding, is just the whole thing hinges on Hayward and if they can get him back. And you know, I do feel like there is a strong chance that the Jazz get him back. And I feel like, you know, you were referencing a site that heathoops.com. I read another breakdown by Dan Clayton today on FanRag that I thought was pretty apt. If Boston was able to get and extend Paul George and get Gordon, it seems like they would have to strip a lot of their team. So I think Utah, if they're able to get Gordon back in the fold, figure out a way to get George or another veteran point guard back in the fold, they're in pretty good shape if they can get healthy. And I think they feel the sense that I got out of that exit interview was that they feel confident about that.
The online overseas reports and rumors are that Teo Dosic is leaning towards coming to the U.S., to the NBA. Seems like the Jazz would be a pretty good suitor for him still at this point, depending on how those George Hill talks and those trade talks go. Something I think we can all agree on, I didn't watch it, but how terrible were the NBA awards last night?
Scale of 1 through 10, man, it was hard to watch.
I mean, I was flipping a lot over to watch Deshaun Stevenson get buckets.
The big three was the – yo, the big three was great.
Deshaun Stevenson, Jermaine O'Neal. You know, the AI game was disappointing. They, like, only played, like, maybe 3 minutes of highlights from that game, and I think you – anybody with, you know, blood running through their veins wants to watch AI just, like, shoot it 50 times in one game. But
my man Mucci Norris was eating pork chops, like, ever since he retired.
It was a sporting event. The big three was, what, 3 days tape delayed or something like that? 36 hours? What was it? It was
2 days.
2 days.
It was
the
great.
The NBA awards are now like 3 months old. I mean, that's what bothers me about doing this so late.
They need to do the NBA awards, and they need to – what they need to do is finish the season on that Tuesday instead of that Wednesday. And then they need to do the NBA awards that Thursday, 2 days before the playoffs start.
Yeah,
that's what they need to do.
If the voting is on the regular season,
that's what.
Then it should be. Then get it done. I mean, all of a sudden you go back and you're like nothing is. You have an entire playoffs to watch that maybe is affecting opinion or would have affected votes, and here you are, many weeks, months removed from that, and you can't, you know, you can't change your vote. It's set in stone. And it just feels stale. It just feels stale.
It was very stale. And I think they have to hold it. They have to hold it early. I think they have to hold it before the playoffs because, obviously, once the playoffs start, then you can't hold it. So, you know, I think they have to hold it before the playoffs next year.
There was a really gold moment yesterday, though, when
Bill Russell,
when Kareem and Hakeem and who else was on the stage?
Shaq.
Dikembe, Shaq.
Lonzo Mourning.
Well, all those guys were there. Bill Russell comes out with his walking cane. Says, I could kick all of y'all asses. That was great. That's some
the Bill Russell moment was wonderful.
Some 80-year-old classic trash talking. That's some good stuff.
The Bill Russell stuff was absolutely great. Absolutely.
Surprised at all by Rudy Gobert's in any way, you know, his returns in the voting or anything like that. I mean, I think everybody, himself included, had Draymond Green winning that award and Rudy for maybe different reasons than other people. But to see him finish where he did in all defense or in most improved, you surprised by anything?
I was shocked that he finished third and a distant third. And most improved because he should have finished second. I thought they got it right with Giannis Antetokounmpo winning the award, but Rudy should have finished second. He finished a distant third, and I was pretty shocked by that.
I will say, I know it's a regular season award, but I walked away from that Warriors series being really impressed with the versatility of Draymond and just some of the plays he made. I mean, I think his overall fitness this year was a lot better, and obviously Rudy made huge strides this year, and that's not really up for debate. But I could understand why people voted for Draymond over Rudy for Defensive Player of the Year, and while Rudy is clearly the most disruptive defensive center in the game, just Draymond this year, and especially in the playoffs, was just a Swiss Army knife of ability and being able to guard all these positions and creating transition plays for his teammates that obviously they're devastatingly effective in.
I thought Rudy was the best defender in the NBA this past year. I thought he should have won Defensive Player of the Year.
Well, your votes are made public. And apparently there was a mix-up with your vote.
I was hacked.
You were hacked? The Russians did this to you?
that was what was suggested.
Fake news.
I voted Rudy second in MIP.
You don't think there's any chance that you accidentally clicked the wrong button?
There's no chance. I checked twice.
Okay. All right. I wanted to touch on that just to make sure.
So you're saying there's?
I'm saying you of think that there's a chance
you think there's a
button.
Chance that I hit Gordon Hayward instead of Rudy Gobert?
I'm not saying you meant to do it. I'm saying I've voted on these things before. I've come agonizingly, terrifyingly close to voting for Seth Curry for all.
You're
sorts
throwing
of
me
ways.
Under the bus.
I am not throwing you under any.
You're
bus.
Throwing me under the bus, and you're backing right back over me.
I am not. It's not me backing up that bus. That could just be a processing error.
Could be a rear view camera error, rear view mirror, objects closer than they appear.
You know what? Let me tell the people something. We are not only colleagues in the Salt Lake Tribune. We're family. Aaron is my family. Cal is my family. They are my
We're
family and my
barbecue
friends.
No family barbecues.
No family barbecues next week on the 4th.
All right. I think that's probably enough for us. We will we'll be back in a week or so. Thanks for listening. Stay safe out there. Bye, guys.
Mic drop.